Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, October 7th, 2016. With me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Glad you're here. And John Martellaro, how are you?
Hey, good morning. Excuse me while I fasten my seatbelt here.
Hey, it's going to be a fun ride, but I'm glad that you practice safety and that you're buckling up. Go ahead and put your goggles on, too. I don't want anyone to lose an eye today.
Yeah, just my ears as well.
There you go. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Smart Backup 4 from SoulSignal. That's pretty awesome. But we have to talk about some other stuff first. Specifically, we need to talk about music. And not just pop music, but...
But let's talk about pop music.
Everybody's talking about pop music. And John didn't hop in.
No, I was going to do, you know, I love rock and roll music. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
You know what, John? Right. You get points for being able to hop in with a music-related song. Mm-hmm. Well done, sir. But where I'm really going with this is the news that Apple Music can now stream DJ remixes. And that this is something that's new for Apple Music and also for Spotify starting today. This is something previously that SoundCloud was doing, but the other guys weren't able to.
And why is that?
And that's because SoundCloud had a deal with Dubset, which is the company that actually analyzes all the remixes, and they have a system where they can actually identify all of the samples in a remix and figure out who is owed what money for licensing and rights and all of that. And so they make that happen. And that's really important because otherwise, the only way people can get at the mixes that they're really interested in, not the only way, but the most common way would be to go to pirate music sites and get the music there.
So, I have a question about that.
Okay.
That technique that they use, is that sort of a derivative of Shazam where they run the music snippet against the database to figure out where it came from?
Loosely speaking, yes.
Cool. Yes, but it's orders of magnitude more complex.
Yes, yeah. They've been able to parse through songs or remixes where, when everything's said and done, there are 600 different entities that have some form of rights related to the piece, and they've been able to do it.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. What Dubset is doing is like crazy, amazing, incredible, and it's also really nice because that means that there are ways now for remix fans to get at what they want to hear legitimately, and having this on Apple Music and Spotify. Well, that's a really great thing for music fans. For SoundCloud, I don't think it's such a great deal because this was something that they could hold up and say, look what we can do when no one else can. This was a draw for SoundCloud.
Okay, first of all, forget Skynet. It's going to be the neural net behind this technology that takes over the world and kills us all.
Yeah, but the music we get to listen to while we go will be awesome.
Or at least the music that gets identified will be awesome.
The music that gets identified will be awesome.
No, but so, and I'm going to step out on a limb.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that our listenership is not necessarily the lifeblood of the DJ remixing.
All right. Well, then maybe we should take a minute and explain to listeners what a remix is.
Is that me?
Sure.
That's you.
Remixes. So, a DJ might remix a song. So, you know, some artists, of course, will make their the actual tracks available to other artists, other producers, other DJs to remix. Other times the DJ might just take the recording and manipulate it from there, but they'll add instruments, they'll take away instruments, they'll emphasize this, they'll emphasize that, they'll change time signatures, they'll change sometimes keys. They'll give a song a completely different feel by adding or taking away or changing the things that are already there, essentially remixing them.
And this is usually done with the approval of the artist or the label?
No.
Yes, no?
It's, no. No, it's something that's done, and then if it's going to be distributed, it can be distributed.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to release it without getting the permissions to do so. But DJs have been doing remixes, John, in the clubs for decades. You know, it's just become ever easier to do it because of digital music recording technologies. It generally speaking, the original artist is seldom involved with the decision or process of actually making a remix. That's certainly not always the case. Like I said, some artists will allow their tracks to be used, so someone can actually take the master recordings and break it down by, you know, and get those original tracks and do with them what they will. So like you'll see a lot of remix albums where usually different producers have been allowed to provide some kind of a remix. Those are always done with the artist involvement or approval, or at the very least with the labels. But you've also got this huge, massive scene of DJs just doing this on their own. And part of the problem here is that copyright law isn't set up to cover who gets what for something like a remix. Especially like, you know, a song that's got 600 parts. I mean, you know, who gets what? And it seems like this technology that Apple has signed this agreement with makes that possible. And the real question, Jeff, is do we know if DJs are signing up to be a part of this?
What we know is that right now there's one remix on Apple Music. And that's DJ Jazzy Jeff's remix of Room In Here, which is an Anderson .Paak song.
And that's the only one so far.
That's the only one so far. Now, I'm not sure if the artists are signing up directly with Apple Music, or if this is something that's being done in conjunction with record labels.
Right.
But there are definitely artists that are signing up to make sure that their content is there. And right now, we're looking at single song remixes being available, like this this version of Room In Here, and what's coming soon will be like multi track sets. So like a DJ that's in a club, and they do a killer set, and that's recorded, that can end up on Apple Music. So yeah, artists are looking at this right now, and my take on this is that this is great for DJs, this is great for remix fans, and there's a stat out there that says there are 700 million remix fans, or people listening to remixes like this every month.
Wow, so that's significant.
Yeah,
and it's a blow to SoundCloud,
right? Because now these people that are looking for a legitimate place to find the remixes, pretty soon they're not going to need to go to SoundCloud.
Yeah, Spotify and Apple Music together will put a huge curb on SoundCloud for this.
Yeah, I agree. And John, I'm guessing you're still kind of wondering, why is this a big deal?
Well, yeah, why don't you fill me in?
All right. Well, so if you have a streaming music service, you want to attract as wide a base of listeners or subscribers as you can. And so that means that you need to make sure that you have a lot of different musical styles or genres available for your subscribers. And one piece in that in that mix that has been missing, and it's a significant piece, is the remix market. And
for Apple. You mean it's been missing for Apple and Spotify?
Yes, it's been missing for Apple and Spotify. And as of today, they've both been able to address that. And as we see more remixes popping up, then that is going to start drawing people away from SoundCloud, which is the place that they would previously go if they were looking for licensed content as opposed to going to pirate sites to get just whatever they can.
So basically, Apple's mantra is rip, mix, burn, remix.
Yeah, I'm not going to sign off on that.
No, but
I do not authorize that, sir.
But you know, as long as you're going way back in time like that, John, I'll go back way back in time and say that I think this fits really well with Apple's early philosophy for what at the time was the iTunes Music Store, and that's to give music fans an easy way to legitimately get at the music they're interested in without having to pirate or steal it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also like if all the rights holders are okay with, I mean, so one of the problems that a lot of DJs were running into back in the day was that even if they wanted to be legitimate, right? Even if they wanted to be above board and license everything, the way copyright was working, you know, every single person, every single artist who contributed, you know, the tiniest of sounds to a song would essentially be entitled to, you know, backing up the artist with 600 samples in it, you know, that would be like, that person's getting 6,000% of 100%. All those people are getting, because copyright law, it wasn't set up to do this. If everyone is signing off on what this company is doing, it really makes things a lot easier for people to have fun with this stuff.
Yes.
I have a question since I'm new to this.
Okay.
Are these remixes for sale generally, or are they given away?
Usually given, unless they're being released through a label,
right? So there you go, John. So this is a big thing, and Brian, to go back to what you were saying, if the labels and the artists are okay with this, and the answer is yes, because they're working with Dubset, and if there's a single sample in any of the remixes that Dubset is analyzing that doesn't have proper licensing or approval from the right people, then it gets bumped and it can't go out. So they're doing a really strict screening process to make sure that nothing slips through that isn't fully licensed.
I'd love to see Dubset's database. You know, dual collation, yeah. 184,614 licenses in a SQL database. It should be awesome.
Their system is pretty awesome. It would be fun to get to go and see what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Yeah, Brian, you'd be right there with us.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Smart Backup 4 from SoulSignal. And you need to go check them out, soulsignal.com/smartbackup. That's SOLE signal.com/smartbackup. Why should you go check them out? Well, it's because your data is important, and you should have it backed up. And Smart Backup 4 is a really great utility for making that happen, because it's very versatile. You can set up scripts to work with it if you want. You can set up automated schedules. You can have it doing incremental backups. You can have it cloning your drives. You can then go back and find old archived versions of documents that you have previously deleted and now realize that, whoops, I should still have that on my drive. No problem. It's all there. And this sounds a lot like what you can do with a lot of other backup apps. But the thing is, you can do this more efficiently with Smart Backup 4. And that's because it can handle the newer media that we're working with today. So like having a RAID system that's right there on your desktop, and that's actually pretty common now. Or having SSD for your storage, which if you're buying a Mac today, that's what you're getting. And their system can take files, and instead of writing them one after another, it can gang them up and write multiple files at the same time, which is really cool and much more efficient. So it's a really cool way to go. And I think this is a pretty awesome app. I want you to think that too, but you shouldn't take my word for it. And that's why you need to go to their website, soulsignal.com/smartbackup. Download the trial version and give it a shot. See what you think. And then when you realize, yep, Jeff is right, I should be using this, then go ahead and pay for your license. It's $34.99 for a single license, and that is not a bad deal considering your data is worth a lot more than that. So go check it out. Smart Backup 4, and that's at soulsignal.com/smartbackup4. And thank you, Smart Backup 4, for being our sponsor this week. All right, the other thing that we need to hit today is a backup sort of thing. We're going back in time to Wednesday. And on Wednesday, John, you were on the show with me and with Kelly Gumont, and we talked about the news that the NSA had gone to Yahoo and said, hey, we want to scan through everyone's email, write us some code that just does that. And Yahoo was like, yeah, okay. And so the NSA has been sifting through Yahoo email en masse for a while now with the assistance of Yahoo. Now,
I want to clarify the word sifting when I get a chance.
That's okay, because you're going to have the opportunity to start doing some clarifying really soon. So the gist of the discussion was, I wasn't comfortable with this. Kelly wasn't comfortable with this. But you felt that the circumstances were probably legit so that this was an okay thing to do.
What?
Let me make my case.
Now wait, Brian. You'll get your chance.
I'll make my case, and then, Brian, you can jump in.
And so the listeners, by and large, exclusively have said, nope, John is wrong. And so I'm going to read one comment that we got, because this sums everything up nicely. And this is from Mr. Boba One, and he says, I'm flummoxed that Marta Lauro thinks that the NSA secretly scanning all emails is okay, especially without notification of the users of the service. Open-ended allowances and agreements are bad and should violate the Fourth Amendment. And then quotes a Fourth Amendment for us. And so, John, go ahead and give me your clarification.
First of all, my comment to that is you don't get to make up your own case law. So here's the thing. On your iPhone, you've got sensitive and personal information. You've got pictures of your kids and where they've been and where they are and where they go to school. You've got contact information, credit card information, banking information, passwords. That information is vital and it's personal, and it's appropriate to be kept on the phone and highly encrypted. And for the FBI to request Apple, as they did back in February, to write code that allows them to break into an iPhone was wrong for all the reasons we discussed back in February, March, April. However, for 20 years now, the internet has been open. People have been exchanging hundreds of trillions of email messages. There's never been any expectation, unless you encrypt your email, that is protected somehow. A long, long time ago, it was clear to us that it was not a safe way to conduct information. And if you wanted to transmit, say, a password to somebody, you wouldn't put it in an email. We all know not to do that. We know that you encrypt it or you use some other mechanism to tell somebody in person. So for 20 years now, the internet's been open. These packets of email have been traversing. And the government has been scanning those for the security of the United States. And in terms of sifting, what you have to understand here is that keywords are being looked for, and then further scrutiny is appropriate. It's not as if somebody in the NSA is sitting down and reading the email first, beginning to end. Hi, Grandma. I'm coming over this weekend for Thanksgiving.
So you're okay with the surveillance?
So they're not. Well, this is, first of all, it's secret because of the
surveillance
of national
state.
Security. It's secret.
There's nothing
because
about the surveillance state that has to be secret. The idea of a surveillance state is that the state watches everything, has access to everything, and gets to do what it wants with anything. You're okay with
this? Well, that's not true. There is a lot of scrutiny. The CIA and the NSA came under a lot of scrutiny in recent years. The Snowden incident, revelations that maybe the NSA had gone too far in some cases. The question about storage of metadata.
Well, I'll give you a for instance.
Handled by Congress. So there is oversight. There was oversight. But what's happening here in this case? Let me finish. So what's happening here in this case is that the NSA is looking for keywords, and the sifting is the process of scanning and looking for a keyword without reading the details of the email, without snooping into your private life. If they find one of these important keywords, it's a sign that there could be something very interesting and perhaps dangerous to the national security going on. And that message is directed to then an analyst who determines whether further action needs to be taken. It's not like there's some bad guy sitting in an office in Washington secretly reading your emails.
All right, I'm going to jump in because I have an analogy here, and then Brian, I'm going to sit back and get my popcorn and let you cut loose. So John, the way I look at this, since the NSA went to Yahoo and said, "Do our job for us," this would be akin to say the police going to my landlord and saying, "Hey, you know, we're looking for people that wear red underpants, so go through all your apartments for us and let us know who has red underpants." And then the landlord's like, okay. And they go out and go into everyone's apartment without their knowledge, go through their dresser and make a list of who has the red underpants, as opposed to the police setting up surveillance outside the apartments and watching to see if they see a little bit of red underpants sticking up above someone's pants.
Let me give you a better example. You have a bank, and you have a video surveillance camera on the top of the bank. And at 12:01 Saturday morning, there's a robbery. 12:01 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon, there's a robbery. So the police come in and say, "We'd like you to scan through the videotapes and look at those videos that happened to run from 12 to 12:05 p.m. Can you give us that snippet?" And the company and the bank says, "No. That would be an invasion of privacy." And the person who was walking on the street or robbing the bank would say, "Well, you evaded my privacy as I was walking into the bank with a gun." And the NSA or the government says, "No, we want to look at those videotapes." And they identify the bank robber and they put him in jail. I think that's a better example.
No, it's a terrible example.
I think it's a bad example.
Your situation is hinging on an action that took place and reaction from the state in pursuit of that action. That's not what we're talking about here with Yahoo.
With Yahoo.
No, they're not. They're just sifting, looking for stuff that
sifting
might be
is
a
the
problem.
Wrong word. Keyword scanning for something that could be a national security import.
Okay, so they are scanning everyone's email. So the NSA is having Yahoo scan everyone's email for
not
them
on the servers, but on the net. As
I don't
as
care. Yahoo is scanning everyone's email for the NSA. I don't care if it's
do
on the server or on the net.
The keyword is expectation of privacy.
No, the keyword is Yahoo is scanning.
We do have an expectation of privacy.
No, we don't. We shouldn't. There's no expectation.
You're basing that on your technical understanding of encryption. It's the same. Your argument to me is the same as you didn't lock your doors, so of course someone can come in and take your stuff. You should have no expectation of security because you didn't lock your doors. We still have...
I think of it more as you take your trash out and you put it on the curb and you said, I'm done with this, and somebody comes along
except
and says,
except for it's not trash. It's
you have
communication.
No expectation. Now, I think there's some legal...
It's a letter between me and you. It's
I think
a
there's some legal recourse on that. I think trash is still yours until it's picked up, but... That's basically
but
my
it's still
point.
Not even trash. We're actually talking. It's more like everything that comes and goes and leaves your house, including you and your kids and your cars, and you're going to school and you're going to work, and all of that is subject to government surveillance. And you're focusing on this notion that
does that mean surveillance keywords, cameras at banks must be turned off because I might do something embarrassing in front of the camera, like sneeze and my red shorts show?
Private versus government. Government surveillance versus private surveillance. When we go into the bank, we don't have that expectation of privacy from the bank. But that does not
but
mean
we do from the
that
government.
The government has access to everything that we do in the bank.
If the government asks the bank to divulge their videos for pursuit of a criminal, is that intrusion?
That's different.
But we're not talking about being in pursuit of criminal with a what is the federal crime?
Bank robbery.
Okay, so you have a bank robbery.
Federal
you're
crime.
Reacting to the bank robbery, and you're pursuing evidence in that bank robbery. There are warrants that are involved with that. This is actually how
law enforcement said we
system works.
With all legal orders, so that was their message to us that the government had a legal basis for what they were doing, and Yahoo elected to comply, or they could have fought it in court. That's an illegal order.
John.
Yes.
There is no specific wrongdoing that is being pursued by this scanning.
Yeah, if you're
the scanning
off.
is looking for patterns. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of validity to the looking for of problems. The thing is this massive slippery slope, and it has no bearing whatsoever to the pursuit of a specific crime.
Next year at the Boston Marathon, police are going to be walking the sidewalks, and if they see a backpack sitting on the sidewalk at the Boston Marathon, they're going to pick it up and inspect it and look at it. Is that an invasion of the owner's privacy because no crime has been yet committed?
Now, John, that's different than if during the Boston Marathon, the police in Denver are picking up bags and looking in them.
No, and it's actually different from that because the proper analogy would be that the government gets to actually go through everybody's everything and not just the backpacks that are sitting out.
What I'm saying is you can't always wait until a crime has been committed. And what I'm talking about is prevention. The reason why we have scans at the airport is prevent something from happening.
So
in the first
you're okay
place.
With the surveillance state. You're good with the surveillance state.
Certain surveillance techniques that try to catch bad guys by preventing something ahead of time, by scanning for devious traffic or by looking at your shoes before you go onto an airline with a bomb in your shoes.
I can't even understand that, but let's make that a given. And today it is people talking about jihadism, or it's people talking about explosions that, you know, or people talking about murder or even a bank robbery that triggers these things. But what is it tomorrow? Tomorrow, maybe it's the people that are talking bad about President Trump.
I asked Cindy Cohn in background mode. She's the executive director of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is well known for fighting for our rights. I said, how far does the government get to go? Where do we draw the line? And she had the right answer. She said, the line is drawn where the people say it is drawn. We get to make the decision through the courts and through our congressmen. The people say where the limit is. And we have to fight for that line.
Yeah, in this Yahoo case, the people didn't have anything to do with it, and the people are having all their email.
So we're like out of time.
Scanned in detail and read every word, and privacy invaded, or are keywords looked for in mail in passing without detail reading?
What difference does it make?
makes a big difference.
Makes a big difference.
That's like saying, well, when we went through the underwear drawer, we didn't see red. We saw some other colors. I can't remember what they all were. And anyhow, so I guess the bottom line is watch out if you're wearing red underpants. and Brian is not okay with the notion that we're having this mass surveillance of email, and John thinks that there might be some legitimate reasons for doing so. And wow, I let us run way over because it was a great discussion.
It was.
And but we have to wrap up. So hey, John, thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
Brian, thank you for being here.
Bah, humbug.
Balderdash.
And Smart Backup 4 from SoulSignal, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, soulsignal.com. That's SOLESignal.com/smartbackup. Download the trial version and start backing up your Mac files. And then go ahead and pay the $34.99 because you're just going to want to keep using it. And listeners, thank you for joining us. And thank you so much for your feedback, because boy, did you spur what I thought was a great conversation today. And we'll see everyone again on Monday.